The conventional wisdom now is that you need to put a product out there as quickly as possible. We took a little bit of a counterintuitive approach at Sprinto. The inherent nature of our space is a little bit of the sort that it involves an audit. And I think we made a deliberate and conscious choice that we would work with a lot more auditors than customers as we are building our MVP. We went to an auditor and say, hey, we want SOC to audit us. And we did this like a dozen more times. And we were slowly building the product behind us. You know, we were actually doing these audits manually while we were building a product that would help us go through these audits. I'm Girish Redekar, and I'm the co-founder and CEO at Sprinto.
This is Code Story, the podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries who share in the critical moments of what it takes to change an industry and build and lead a team that has your back. I'm your host, Noah Labhart, and today how Girish Redekar created a way for your cloud-hosted company to gain compliance status 10 times faster. All this and more on Code Story. If you would have told Girish Redekar while he was in college that he would eventually be writing software, he would have been shocked. His studies focused on electrical engineering, and post-school, he was a hardcore analyst. After some time, he and his friend decided to go do the whole startup thing. They tried a bunch of ideas and taught themselves to code. Outside of tech, he's a movie buff, but bent towards the obscure movies that most haven't heard of. So obscure that he couldn't remember the name of the last one that he saw. In his prior startup, he went through the painstaking process of becoming SOC 2 certified. This experience stuck with him, so much so that when he and his co-founder ventured out to start something new, they decided to create something to make this easier. This is the creation story of Sprinto.
Sprinto is quite simply a software platform that helps other SaaS companies obtain security and privacy compliances 10x faster. That in turn helps our customers accelerate revenue, close high ticket deals, and pass vendor security assessments with ease. Conventionally, obtaining these compliances takes tons of CTO time, and Sprinto just makes it a lot faster by automating a bunch of legwork and busy work that usually happens in these processes. Primarily, these compliances require you to run hundreds of practices and processes called controls. And this is a manual, error-prone, painstaking exercise. And what Sprinto does is we connect with your systems that you typically use as a modern technology company. And we automate a bunch of things that you would otherwise have to do manually. This could include systems like your cloud provider, your version control systems, your identity systems, and so on and so forth. So that's roughly what Sprinto does. We sort of help you run a security or a compliance program at one-tenth the effort. So this is, again, something that came about from personal experience. Before this, my previous startup was another SaaS company, and I think 80% or more of our customers were in the US. And that's when we had our first tryst with these compliances like SOC 2 and ISO 27001. As engineers, we got a front row seat to what these compliances really mean, where they become painful, what the gotchas are. We had an excruciating 6-month process, which we all hated from the bottom of our heart. Fast forward to the time that we were thinking of, doing another company. This was one of the experiences that stayed with us, and we thought that there's got to be a better way of doing it. So that's roughly how we got started. It came out of a personal pain point that I had faced as an engineer in a SaaS company, and we really wanted to solve that.
Let's jump into the MVP then. So tell me about the first product you built for Sprinto. How long did it take to build, and what sort of tools did you use to bring it to life?
The conventional wisdom now is that you need to put a product out there as quickly as possible. And we took a little bit of a counterintuitive approach at Sprinto. The inherent nature of our space is a little bit of the sort that it involves an audit. And these are auditors who are certified by independent third-party bodies and so on and so forth. So the auditors are an important part of this entire equation. And I think we made a deliberate and conscious choice that we would work with a lot more auditors than customers as we are building our MVP. So the first version was a little bit like this. We went to an auditor and say, hey, we want SOC to audit us. And the auditors say, yeah, great. Okay, you know, we're paying them money to audit us. And we did this like a dozen more times. So the way we actually went about building the product is that we were just constantly getting ourselves audited. We were learning the ropes of what an auditor really looks for when you go through these compliances. And we were slowly building the product behind us. You know, we were actually doing these audits manually while we were building a product that would help us go through these audits. And that's how the first, how the software took shape over time. So we spent I think we've spent 12 plus months building the first version that we were actually able to put out in front of somebody else.
Okay, with that first version, you kind of alluded to this a little bit. Let's dive in. With any first version of a product, you've got to make certain decisions and trade-offs about what you start with, you know, feature cut, technical debt, anything like that. So tell me about some of those decisions and trade-offs you had to make and how you coped with them.
There was one of these things, right? There is this whole talk about whether to build like a monolith versus using microservices. And I think I remember this was a pretty big debate in the company at the time about which of these two paths to take. And the thing that occurred to us at the time was that, hey, we don't really know our domain very well. We don't exactly know what all the requirements of a product here is going to be. We are actually learning. Breaking this down into different microservices just yet may not be a great idea because we don't really know what the basic components of this thing are going to be. So we deliberately made a choice that, hey, we're going to be a monolith until it's very clear to us what the building blocks of a system like this is truly going to be. So we dumped this entire thing as we were learning into like a single monolith. I'm kind of glad we made it at the time, because it allowed us to move fast and sort of meet the requirements of our auditors and our customers quite quickly, which is the most important thing that you want to do during the MVP stage.
So then from that point, you've got your MVP, right? How did you progress the product from there and how did you mature it? And to put that in a box, I'm asking, how you built your roadmap and how you went about deciding, okay, this is the next most important thing to build.
As soon as we started working with customers, the standard thing that will happen is that your product basically gets pulled in 100 different directions. There are existing customers who are talking about the gaps that they see. There are prospective customers who are asking about things. Hey, do you do this and do you do that? And then you have your own vision of, what the product ought to look like. And it's kind of hard to, put them together, prioritize, sequence them and pick the one that you're actually going to execute right now. One of the things that has served me well towards the later stages of my previous company, RecruiterBox, is this very simple sort of way of thinking about product and what to pick. And I think this is by a person called Slava Atmaket. The way he describes, going about making these decisions is that the simplest way to look at, deciding what to build is to put all your ideas that you have, feedback, ideas, your own vision, whatever it is, into three buckets. And bucket number one is what we call game changers. These are things that you believe are going to make you stand apart. These are things that your customers go, oh, wow, about. You sort of are doing something that has not been done before, and you are absolutely sort of putting like a stake in the ground further ahead than what anything else has been done until then so far. So you put your list of ideas there. These are your what you think are potential game changers. The second bucket is these things which we call deal breakers, and these are things which are just table stakes. These are things that are expected of a product like you. Based on where the market is, what your competition is doing. This is just table stakes. You absolutely need to do this, else you don't have a shot of even existing in the market. So that's your second bucket. And then your third bucket is everything else. Anything else that doesn't fit any of these two is a third bucket. And the product and the broad philosophy is that, hey, you need to make sure that you're spending as an early stage startup a ton of your time on game changers. And that's your first priority. You need to spend the second set of time on deal breakers. Game changers are are more important as compared to deal breakers. And then if you're left with some bandwidth, you can go after everything else. Now, I know it's an overly simplistic framework, but it works surprisingly well, especially at early stages when you have very little bandwidth and you really need to pick your battles carefully.
So then let's switch to team, Girish. How did you build your team? And what did you look for in those people to indicate that they were the winning horses to join you?
We looked for specifically two attributes more than anything else. When we were building the team, at least in the development team, one of the important things that we looked at is your ability to break down a problem. The important thing that we'll have to do is you get like a fairly fuzzy, knotty problem. And I think the people who do well at early stage in the product are those who can actually get break it down into something much smaller and say that, okay, this gives me about 80% of the benefit rather than solving the entire problem. And I think that's a crucial, important skill. And a bunch of what we used to do in our conversations, when we are trying to hire, is try and figure this out, either based on past experience or something else. Do they sort of have this ability to take a very amorphous thing and break it down into something that can actually be implemented and executed quickly? And that sort of leads me to the second point that we typically look for, which is, like a bias to action. This is a fairly common thing that has a lot has been said and written about this. But in general, we truly believe that a mediocre plan that can be executed today is better than a beautiful plan that can be executed tomorrow. So we tend to look out for people who would actually get down and get it done than people who would tend to sort of get lost in some sort of an analysis paralysis. So these were the two guiding principles we had overall as we were building out the team. And these were the couple of things that we were looking at early on when we were sort of building it out.
I really like what you said too about executing a mediocre plan being better than no plan at all. 75% done is better than 0% done, or 75% quality is better than 0%. There are nuances to that. But I think in general, I agree with you. So let's flip to scalability then. So did you build this to scale efficiently from day one, or have you been fighting this as you grow?
Honestly, scale means different things in different contexts. So the kind of scale that we worried about a little bit more was not computational scale, which is the natural thing that we tend to think about. We were a lot more conscious about whether this scales in terms of getting a large number of people to work on it simultaneously, which is a different measure of goodness. Like, having run a software company before, I think the places where we used to hit bottlenecks was more that it became at some point harder for the entire team to be able to work simultaneously on the code base. You get into some sort of these very weird situations. So for us, scalability in terms of, being able to scale the application across, let's say, millions of users was something that we did not worry about as much as I did about worrying about, scaling this to, let's say, tomorrow they're going to be 50 developers working on this. That was a more clear and present problem that I was looking to solve scalability for. I'm not sure if that is in the line that you're asking this question about, but honestly, that's a bigger thing that gave me and my co-founder sleepless nights.
Well, as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
I'm extremely proud of what we've built at Sprinto, specifically as a product. I was hinting at this earlier. Compliance is an extremely complex space, and it was a very alien domain for us. Neither of us co-founders are actually belong to that space directly. Though we had, just faced the problem before. And we had to make sure that we are doing a good job of mapping that domain into software. And that happens fairly early on. If you don't architect it well, you're sort of fighting like this, this immovable object as you are, building out more features and you learn more about the environment, etc. So I think I'm really proud of the way we architected Sprinto. It's only a couple of years in, but I know for a fact that, we have a very powerful core on top of which, the entire roadmap can actually be built out. Like, in my head, I can think 5 years ahead of how this product evolves, and it fits with what we've already built. I, for example, did not have the same confidence when I was doing my previous company. And I'm really proud of the fact that, hey, we could get it to a point where, we can actually, build out these really, really cool things that we have in our mind without actually breaking what exists, but building on top of what exists. So that's roughly how I look at it. I know it's a boring answer, but the architecture of SprintOS is something that I'm really, really proud of.
Well, let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
I'm sorry, nothing comes to my mind right now, Noah. This is one of those questions that I didn't have an answer for earlier as well.
So no mistakes. You guys have just hit it on the head every day.
No. I'm sure I've made a ton of mistakes. I'm just trying to recall. All the mistakes have a lot of context behind them. So I'm not actually recalling something that will make sense, in a short conversation. I'm going to need some time on that. Sorry about that.
So what does the future look like for the Sprinto product and for your team?
I'm really excited about what the future holds for us. The way we look at this is that this is one of those painful problems that nobody wants to touch, and we're taking a stab at it. What this would mean is that a large number of companies, there are roughly two segments. There's a set of companies who don't actually have access to these compliances today simply because of the amount of time and effort they entail and the amount of resources that they need from a company in order to go through this program. What Sprinto in turn is really doing is that we are making these compliances more accessible, and we sort of leveling out the playing ground. And that's something that's extremely exciting to us. So the way I look at this is that, Sprinto really, really becomes like a de facto software for you to be able to actually run your compliance or your security program. And what that means is that Sprinto works with a large number of other systems that you might be naturally using. So that's a very high level picture of what I think the future looks like for the product. The team's really excited about this as well. Most of the people in the team are prior SaaS founders who have gone through this pain before in one way or the other as well. I'm not sure that's the answer you're looking for, but that's roughly what we look at. That's what gets us out of the bed every day.
Let's switch to you, Girish. Who influences the way that you work? Name it CEO, CTO, architect, really any person that you look up to, and why?
I think there's a little bit of a recency bias here, but I do admire Elon Musk and the way he goes about some of the things. He's picked really, really hard problems to go after. There is a lesson in there. So that's something that I really, really look up to. I admire the way he's, gone after solving some of the hardest problems of our generation. So that influences me.
If you could go back to the beginning, what would you do differently? Or where would you consider taking a different approach?
I usually don't like to think in that form. I'm sure I made like a ton of mistakes that I would do differently if I were in the same situation again. Yeah, so I'll give you an example of what's really changed in the way I do some of these things, especially since my previous company. I think I was fairly trigger happy with programming early on. I still think I am a little bit, but not as much as I used to be. So, like I was saying earlier, right, when I first learned how to program and how to build web applications, it was kind of like this thing where I wake up, I have an idea in my head, and by night, I just really wanted to make sure I ship something around it and put it out there. And what I realized, during the first couple of years that we were working on the startup, where we went nowhere, is that we spent a ton of time building things that nobody wanted. Nobody really wanted. They looked exciting and interesting to us, but they didn't really make sense in the market. So, if there's one thing that I would change about the way I would do something in the past, it would be that to learn a little bit earlier that, hey, it's one thing to be able to build something. It's another thing to build something that's useful to someone else. And I know that sounds very straightforward and trite, but it's a harder lesson learned for me.
So last question, Girish. You're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world. Can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
This relates a little bit to what I was saying earlier. I'm the first person who gets really excited about building something really cool. I still think that as leaders in the technology space, we have to cross the chasm of taking something that's cool to making it something that's actually useful. I don't know if this is advice, but I would basically ask that person to think a little bit more critically about what does this mean to take something that's cool to making it useful. And that's not always a very straightforward answer. I've been in that place more often than I'd like to. My simple advice there would be to keep looking at how people react to what you've built, and they'll usually give you clues around, the answer is somewhere usually in the adjacency or the neighborhood of what you've already built. So keep looking at that is my simple advice that I would pick.
Oh, that's great advice. Well, Girish, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Sprinto.
Thank you for having me.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Laphart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. Support the show on patreon.com/codestory for just $5 to $10 a month. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.